Nice. Soul on ice. I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Whenever and wherever you are listening to this show, we want to welcome you to Soul on Ice, the podcast, coming to you live and direct. They call me Kwame, and of course, Double Trouble's in the house, Akil Thomas and Elijah Roberts. What's going on, my boys?
How much, Kwame? What's going on?
What's up, Kwame Surfrex?
Listen, don't even, that's not going to stick. So just, you know, have that once and just leave that alone. On today's show, representing the borough from Toronto, former NHL player and current Sportsnet broadcaster, Anthony Stewart. He's going to be in the house. That's going to be a really cool interview. I know you guys are going to really dig that. And I got to give a big up to the Minister of Social Information, Brother B. He's holding it down on all our social media platforms. Soul on Ice, the podcast. Make sure you hit us up. Subscribe, rate, and review. You know, as far as social media goes, boys, I'm telling you what Brother B is doing. Nobody in the hockey podcast world is matching his flavor. So I'll put him up against anybody that's got a podcast out there.
Agree, man. There's no one else doing it like he's doing it. He's snapping every post. So
he's killing it. He's definitely killing it. All right. So I hope you guys had yourself a great week. It is hot. It's hot out here in Toronto. So wherever you are in the world, I hope you keep yourself as cool as possible. But last week was a really cool show, really fun show. We did a little survey. And for those who didn't catch it, I want you to take a listen to this. Who would be the lead singer if you guys were in the R&B group?
Keel knows the answer to that. Let's just see if he caps or not.
I'm not much of a singer, so.
Okay, right, let's just say you guys, okay. Hypotheticals. If you guys could sing, okay, and it's a duo, who would be lead vocals?
Me, for sure.
Really?
Eli from the UK.
I think we should try.
Okay, so now it's a boy band. It's five members of the group. You guys have the best voices. Who's going to be the lead singer?
Well, probably me because sure. I'm better looking, right? So it's like, got to go with the best.
We can put this to the test.
So there it is. Akil or Elijah? Who got the numbers? Let's bring in Brother B into this conversation. Brother B, what's the numbers on those on that survey and who won in what categories?
So we actually dropped this on Twitter and Instagram, and it was cool because people did have a good time with it. And I think we're going to try stuff like this moving forward, you know, keep you guys engaged. But I guess it kind of comes down to which platform you believe in more, because we had differing results. So on Twitter, we actually had Akil winning, but you had to like for Akil, you had to retweet for Elijah. So we had Akil winning with 15 likes and Elijah with 12 retweets. And to be fair, the retweet is, it's more to call, you know, it's more to ask of people. So we'll give him that. But then on the flip side, on Instagram, we had Elijah winning 52% to Akil's 48.
What do you think, boys?
Hey man, a dub's a dub on Twitter. Doesn't matter. Like, retweet, who cares? But for you Instagram people out there, I want to know why. I want the feedback. DM the account. I want to know why. Let's find out.
Honestly, I'm a little disappointed that it was even close on either platforms. I thought I was just going to run away with it. But as Brian said, on Twitter, it's a little bit, you're more likely to like things than retweet things. So I think that might be why I didn't win on both platforms. But I think Instagram means a little more, and I'll take the win.
For you people who vote for Elijah out there, I just want to know what R&B singer you have seen out there that doesn't have a tooth while performing. I just want to know if there's anyone out there. So if there's a question, let me know. Hit my DMs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's the first for everything, man. I'm sure one day you'll see that out there. Maybe it'll be me. The first singer without a tooth.
You'd be a good R&B singer because they like to sing about love and you love your girlfriend so much and stuff, right? So I could see it.
Yeah, he's the romance.
I'm like The Weeknd, man.
He's the romance guy of the crew. He's the romance guy of the crew. He just happened to lose a tooth in a studio accident. You know what I mean? He was on the mic. The mic was too close. Bong. Right out and just knocked down. He said, you know what? I'm gonna keep it. I'm gonna keep it the buck with everybody. I'm gonna keep this. Keep this look. You know. And that
kept
look
singing, kept singing though. Once it got knocked out, kept singing.
Kept singing. Exactly.
Love for the music.
That's beautiful. Well, we thank you, Brother B, for helping us out with that survey. We definitely have to do something like this again in the future. And just want to let people know that I let people know, but not let people know, but we got some really big news coming to you probably next week. So make sure you stay tuned for that. It's going to be really cool. Yes, Elijah.
I do want to see people message us, reach out to our individual accounts, whatever, and let us know what they want to see, because we all don't live too far from each other. So whatever people want to see, we can definitely make it happen.
I think we need a push-up competition, because you guys is always talking that ill smack about your training. And me, I'm actually curious to see who can do more push-ups. So
shout out to my Bella Dad Jimmer. He's listened to I think pretty much every episode, and he called me the other day and gave me shit for not knowing who Wu-Tang was. So
shout out to Jimmer. Well, that's, you need to do your research. If your billet dad knows who Wu-Tang is, you know. I don't know. I'll work with you guys. I'm gonna work with you guys. I'm gonna do your playlists for you have to when you're in LA, like, just, you got to let me give you one playlist, and we'll watch that game and see how you do that game.
Sent down right to the coach.
Elijah, you sound a lot different than how crisp myself and Akil sound, which means you did not bring your microphone, your Zoom, your Yeti Blue microphone. Where are you and what are you doing?
I came down to Wasaga Beach with my family for Monday to Thursday, so just kind of something to do, get away from home. There's still on the beach, there's a lot of social distancing still, and just to kind of get out of home, get away, have some fun still.
What are your workouts looking like at the cottage?
Running on the beach, man. It's a lot harder to run on the beach.
You running on the beach like Rocky and Apollo Creed?
Haven't yet, but tomorrow's day one of that.
You believe
taking
him,
a couple kid? Taking a couple days off.
Okay. Akil, so give us some news that's going on out there in the NHL.
So just over Instagram and in the media today, you know, the dates for NHL's return to play kind of got leaked, and it's pretty interesting. July 13th, the start of formal training camp begins. July 26th, the travel to the hub cities started, and I think the hub cities are Edmonton, Toronto. August 1st, start of qualifying round. So you know, obviously it's, you know, early July, but you know, August is right around the corner, so you know, we could be seeing some hockey coming pretty soon. And you know, I'm excited to see what happens. I'm excited to see who loses first round. I'm excited to see how that all, you know, pans out and who gets it. It'll be a pretty cool story, you know, like Lafreniere will go to a team, and the only reason why he'll go to that team is because of COVID. It'll just be kind of like a neat kind of thing that happens and stuff. So it's gonna be crazy. What do you guys think about that?
I'm pretty pumped about it as well. Just to see hockey, just to see what they do in Toronto and Edmonton in the stands, how the players adapt and how fit they are coming back. I know a lot of the guys are looking forward to getting back, but I also know a lot of guys are not looking forward to being away from their families for such a long time. So, you know, we always talk about the physicality of the game, but there's also that mental toughness of that game, and being away from your family for so long, that could weigh on a person mentally. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens when these guys get back on the ice.
And yeah, I'm really excited for it. I mean, not to speak for you guys, but I'm kind of getting tired of watching a lot of Netflix. I want some live sports, and you know, the NBA is coming back at the same time, and I think MLB same time. So the fact that there'll be sports on TV, it's kind of a big relief, and I'm looking forward to it.
Obviously we all found out about Austin Matthews testing positive for COVID-19. Mm-hmm. And I heard just the grapevine that a couple guys on Tampa and a couple staff got tested positive there, but no names. But saw some posts the other day on Instagram. Not sure how reliable it is, but they said like 9 NHL players tested positive in the last 7 days. So I think it'll be interesting to see when, you know, formal training camp begins and if cases, you know, arise and when teams travel to hub cities, you know, how that all pan out. And because if you're in, you know, a playoff round and like 10 guys get COVID, like, are they just going to cancel the round, forfeit? Like, it'll be, you know, interesting to see all this happen. And, you know, obviously they're going to try to do their best to isolate the players and like basically make them have no contact with anyone else. But, you know, you never really know what can happen. And I think it'll just be interesting to see.
Yeah. And again, going back to that, it's like you're quarantined, man. I don't know how that's going to, you know, how that will play out mentally for a guy. You know, it's going to be a lot of Zoom calls back home, a lot of video games, because there's really after the game, you got to go right back to your hotel and you got to stay there. You know, your meals are probably going to be brought to you, and man, it's going to be a tough one. But again, selfishly as a fan, I am so looking forward to the guys getting back to playing. And I'm not sure if you guys, I'm sure there's going to be what? No players in the stands. Is that what's going to be happening?
No fans.
No fans. Sorry.
I believe so. Yeah.
That's going to be interesting because, you know, I'm thinking of the sound, you know, cause you're going to be able to hear everything now, you know, it's
someone throws a huge hit and it's just crickets, just nothing. Yeah. It's going to be like Pee-wee back in the day when guys are slamming their sticks on the boards to make noise. So
yeah, it's going to be crazy.
And like my, I was speaking with my dad and obviously hub city's Toronto. And he was just saying like, oh, does like Toronto just get home ice advantage for the whole playoffs? And I'm like, not really. Cause you know, a big part of a playoff series is it's the fans. And, you know, in the OHL, every rink is different. Like you get a different feeling in every rink, I believe. And I think Elijah can say the same thing, but I think in the NHL, it's like way more regulated. Like there's no, you know, Peter Rowe Memorial Center boards and Ottawa's square boards and stuff. So I think pretty much every rink kind of feels the same. I think like I would assume it's just like the fans that, and obviously the locker room, that would make the biggest difference. But obviously the Scotiabank Center is definitely a nice arena. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah. And speaking of Toronto, I was actually talking to this with my sister on the way up. As a Toronto fan, well, I'm a Pittsburgh fan, but being from Toronto, Toronto fans have been waiting for the Stanley Cup for, what is it now, 67, 68 years? Is it more than that?
Well, it was 1967 when they last won, so do the math.
Anyways, it's been a long time, but imagine they won this year and couldn't we couldn't celebrate, have a parade. Like that would be crazy. I was just talking about it with my sister and figured how crazy that would be because they are probably one of the favorites, I would say. Like they have one of the best rosters. Like, can argue that, but
they've had one of the best rosters for a while. You know, it's just it's a tough one. But knowing the Leafs' luck, like that would definitely happen the year they win. It's the year we can't celebrate at all. So
yeah, and a little bit aside from hockey, figured I had to mention this because I thought it was absolutely crazy, the Patrick Mahomes deal.
Oh yeah,
crazy, biggest deal in sports history. So I think Kwame's got a little bit of facts about it, but it's crazy deal.
So the contract breakdown: 10 years, he's going to make $503 million. And how that breaks down even more: in 1 year, he will make $50.3 million. In 1 day, he's going to make $137,808. In 1 hour, he's going to make $5,742. In 1 minute, $96. And in 1 second, he's going to make, for each second, he will make $1.60. Imagine that, my boys.
That's so many chicken nugget meals from McDonald's.
Just to put that in perspective, an NHL salary cap is $60 million, and he's making $50 million in 1 year alone. So he's almost making more than an entire team.
I mean, if the NHL players can get to that status, man. I mean, I guess it's, you know, again, football is, that's the American pie. I mean, that's the American thing, and they make so much. They generate so much money. I guess this is kind of, is this like one of the biggest deals ever? Is that, would that be categorized?
It is the biggest. It's the biggest deal ever. There's, I think Mike Trout was the next closest with 12 years, $425 million.
So how much?
Is the LeBron James deal anything like this one?
No. Because baseball players and NFL players are kind of way above everyone else and with pay.
What about soccer? Soccer players get paid a ton.
Soccer's up there, yeah. But I still don't think. I know for sure that this is the highest paid deal ever.
Gosh, we picked the wrong sport, man.
I know. I think about it all the time. And on top of that, he's getting $140 million guaranteed. So if he never played another game in the NFL, he's getting $140 million.
But, you know, my dad always just say this to me. How much money do you really need? Like,
you don't, you don't
$503 need million. I mean, that's legacy. So for that to really work, he's going to have to get married and have a ton of kids. And then those kids have a ton of kids. And those kids' kids have a ton of kids. So that money trickles down. If it's just him. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, his family cannot be that deep right now. So to me, that money only makes more sense if you're looking at a legacy in your family. But, you know,
well, he's got to go do good with that money, I think. Yeah. Like, you have that much money, you can't be selfish and just use it all for yourself, even like your family. Like, you got to do some sort of good, whether it's with hospitals or helping the homeless. You got to do something good with all that money.
And you got to think, like, how will he ever have another worry in the world? Like, he's set. Like, what does he have to worry about now? Just playing. He just has to show up and perform and win another championship. Like, he's set. That's awesome. That'd be crazy.
I mean, we can all agree that money don't buy you happiness.
No.
Shout out to Jellystone. But, you know, it's, I mean, if you're smart about it, like, like you said, you just got to go and show up. You just got to go and play and just live life to the fullest. And, you know, like Elijah said, is do good things. So he has an opportunity to do great things, but that's got to be also a lot of responsibility. I don't know how his family is or the people he grew up with, his crew, but he's going to be writing a lot of checks, helping a lot of people out, paying off a lot of mortgages, car notes, vacations, all that, if his family is deep. Let me ask you that, Elijah or Akil. Has anybody talked to you about financial responsibility as an athlete?
Yeah, I mean, I have a financial advisor, and we've kind of talked about it, but at the same time, like, I haven't played a pro game. I'm not really ready to have, like, that, you know, that big, serious sit-down talk. I really don't have, you know, that much money, and but it's in the future. But, you know, family, friends have definitely sat down with me and just said, you know what, in a few years, this is how stuff is going to go. People may ask for this. People may do that. This is how you should do things. So I've had a lot of people reach out, a lot of guidance and all that. So I think I'm, you know, if that were to ever happen, I think I'd be ready. And, you know, like Elijah said, I'd want to, you know, help as many people as I can out. And, you know, because a lot of people kind of helped me accomplish all I've done. So
Tesla. I just need a Tesla. I just need a Tesla. That's all.
Tesla truck. Yeah,
this gonna be a Tesla truck, and we good. No,
It's funny. My grandma always says, like, Kiel, if you make the NHL, like, the only thing I want is a red Corvette convertible. She says it to me every time she sees me, just so like I actually like. I don't know.
So you know you have to do it. Yeah, I have to do it. Elijah, have you ever thought about that? I mean, obviously your role is a little different. But have you ever thought about, if you were potentially in the NHL, what that looks like, being financially responsible?
Yeah, my plan has always been, I've never wanted to make my money from the NHL. Even if I was making $8 million a year, my plan has always been to have a business of my own, and I want that to be my income. But yeah, for me, it'd be family first, take care of my family. I have a really big family, so I know there's the chance that I have cousins who I haven't spoken to in years come and say, can I have this or I need this? So I think that's something you have to sit down and talk about with a financial advisor and other family members. But yeah, for me, it's family first. And then I don't think I need to be like a multimillionaire. Like, just live comfortable and do good, donate money, help, like what PK Subban did with the hospital, stuff like that. That's kind of where my head's at if I had a lot of money.
For all you young sports athletes out there that are listening to the podcast, if you really want to watch a really great documentary, they had a ESPN 30 for 30. It's called Broke. That is one of the best documentaries out there when it talks about financial responsibility as an athlete. And you should really check that out.
Yeah, I've heard of that, actually. I'm going to check that out. But, Laj, I have a random question for you. How many kids do you want?
How many kids does he have or does he want?
Both.
I don't know. I'm 21, man. I haven't thought about that yet. I do want, like, kids, though. And I don't know. But I haven't thought about how many yet.
Just I want, like, 14 working,
working
and 15.
On myself right now. Yeah, maybe I'll build a whole NBA starting lineup. Maybe that's the plan.
Imagine. Yeah, but I want like 14 kids, like 12 maybe.
You want a big family, Akil?
Yeah, I grew up with four siblings and it was so much fun. And my mom's sister has six kids and I've lived with them. So much fun. I just love having a house busy. And
you better calm down, though. You're struggling to feed your siblings that are at your house right now. Are you going to feed 14 kids?
By the way, no?
You do. If you've ever been to a Thomas gathering, it's like a posse of people. It's the most insane thing you'll ever see. And it's a lot of family members. I feel for you when you play that first game in Toronto, bro. I feel for you because you are going to be shelling out a lot of money for tickets on that game. Your very first game. Because I remember even Trevor Daly used to say, oh, man, I used to spend a lot of money when I come home to play in Toronto. I can't imagine what it's going to be like for you, bro.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I got to play a pro game before I think about that. But I've kind of thought about it. Like, people joke around with me like that for sure. Because, like, I literally have, like, probably have, like, 30 people that are close with me and my family that, like, I call my uncle, my cousin, my aunt, and, like, they're not related to me. So but that's just how close we are. Yeah. And that's just how some black people get down, I guess. We just love having a big family. And my parents just obviously grew up in Toronto and, you know, they've stayed close to a very large amount of people. So I have a big family. Yeah.
And, you know, when I talk about you playing in the NHL, I know you're not there yet. I know you have to make that, but I only do that because I just want to have that, put that positive vibe out there, like you're already there. And I know you have a lot of work. And so I don't want anybody out there that's listening think that we're being cocky, that the kid is already in the show. It's just, for me, it's just wishful thinking, you know, and I've always felt that way about Akil, just from all the years of watching him playing and just seeing him progress and stuff like that. So, yeah, you know, trust me, bro, that first game, you don't have to worry about me. I'll get in some way. Listen, we're going to take a pause for the cause and then we come back. When we come back, representing the borough, that's a place in Toronto we call Scarborough. His name is Anthony Stewart. He's holding it down right here on Soul on Ice, the podcast. Yo, Stewie.
How's it going?
Good, brother. What's going on with you, Mike?
Good. Just getting home. I was on the ice 3 hours today with the Utes. Then
where do you work with them?
I got a gym in Vaughan Iceplex. So I'm there. The gym's not open yet, but I do all my stuff for the Vaughan.
Nice. Who's out there? Anybody know?
Yari. Do you know Yari? Yari trains like Brent Burns, Stamkos, and all those guys. So he's there too.
Okay.
He's a crazy guy. No, crazy European guy.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Puts guys in the National Hockey League. Yeah. So.
Okay. No. What about youngins?
Yeah, I was on the ice with Nate today, Nate Adams. And there's this other kid, his name's Amari Sellers.
Yeah, okay. I know him.
Yeah, so those
how
guys
old is Nate now?
Nate's in 06, so he's going into Bantam. So both those guys will probably be first round OHL guys.
How good is that?
Sellers will be?
Sellers will be, yeah. Sellers.
Really?
I think Sellers is going to be better than Nate.
Really?
Yeah. I remember he played on my brother's skills team. He was good.
Yeah.
He was small. Has he got bigger?
Yeah, he's probably about 5'8" now, 5'9", you know.
It's actually crazy seeing those kids in band. I'm seeing how, like, kids, how much kids they are.
They're better than me in skill and all that stuff, right? They're better.
It's funny. Just knowing, like, in 2 years, they're going to be in the OHL. Like,
I know. It's crazy.
All right, brother. You ready to get busy?
Yeah, let's go.
All right. Born in Quebec, raised in the borough. For those who don't know, Scarborough, that is. Our next guest, he was drafted in the first round, 25th overall in 2003 to the Florida Panthers. In his first game with the big boys, he recorded his first assist against the New Jersey Devils. Then 2 days later, his first goal was against the Washington Capitals. He's got 3 gold medals representing Team Canada. Currently, he holds it down on Sportsnet Radio, and you can see him on TV. The older brother of one of the scariest forwards ever to play the game. Let me introduce you to Anthony Pretty Tony Stewart. What's going on, brother?
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for having me on.
For those who don't know, the brother who I'm talking about is Chris Stewart. How tough of a player is your brother?
People don't really understand, like, how tough he is. There's tough, and then he's next level tough, where, again, I had to toughen him up over the years now, but as soon as he turned 16, he just gave me the look. So he's willing to fight me, his own fresh flesh and blood, over the color of the sky. If I tell him the sky's green and he tells me it's blue, well, I better switch my answer to blue, because it's to green, because it's going to be a big, big problem. So
I've seen some pictures of him on the bench, warm up, and I just look at him, I'm just like, who, like, you don't want that smoke. He just looks like he's fierce. Is it true that you had to basically convince him to continue playing hockey? Was he really going to quit?
Yeah, he actually did quit. So his OHL draft year, he actually did not play organized hockey. He did some school hockey, but he was playing football, just based on the fact that hockey was really, really expensive. I was away at the OHL and I wasn't signed yet, and no one was really there to pay his costs. So he actually quit just because it was too big of a financial burden on the family. So he played football, and he actually just played football because it was local. It was in Scarborough. He went to and from to football practice. And I actually came back from junior 1 year, and I said, hey, you know, I saw him play a little bit of school hockey, and he had hands. He was probably about 60 pounds overweight, but he could still put the puck in the net. So I said, hey, you know what? Let's get you in shape this summer. Let's put you in, let's get you in the gym here, get you running, get you, running some laps here. And he actually, the rest was history. He actually made it to Kingston on a tryout. He went in as a fighter, even though he was a skilled guy. He did whatever it took to make that team. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, once I went away to World Juniors, he got an opportunity to be a goal scorer. And he was captain 2 years later on that team.
Same thing's going on with me right now. My little brother, good hockey, you know, 2 years ago, and I'm trying to get him to go back into the sport. And he's living in Atlanta now. So after the season when I saw him, I was like, what are they putting the food over there? So I can get my brother in shape and back in the hockey as well.
That's good. Well, because, you know, and again, with what's going on right now, the life lessons you learn just playing hockey. You know, I have friends to this day that they said they've never been late. They've never been late to their regular job just based on the discipline that they learned on being, you know, being on a hockey team. You can't be late. You got to be on time. You know, he learned how to eat healthy and taking care of his body. So the longer you play, that helps you prepare you for life. So that's why I say, hey, get him back playing, do whatever it takes, fly him out to LA when you're there, hopefully sooner than later. That's what I did with my brother. I brought him to Florida, showed him the life. This is what you can really, you know, it can really change your life. So whether or not you play in the National Hockey League, it doesn't matter. Those life lessons of just being a discipline and being a good citizen in society, hockey teaches a lot of those lessons.
I mean, I know your brother went in and kind of earned his spot on Kingston, but from what I know, you actually asked the coach to give him a tryout. Yeah. What made you go to the coach and ask him? I mean, that probably wasn't something easy to do.
Well, I had some clout. I had some clout because I was a pretty good player, and I don't think I threatened to leave the team or get traded, but I had a pretty good relationship with the GM, and I actually walked into his office, and I said, hey, you know, you got to do this for me. This guy is going to be the heir apparent for Kingston. He's going to be a future captain. He just needs an opportunity, and that's all I need. Just give him some time. He's a little bit out of shape, but give him some time. So he actually, you know, respected me and gave him an opportunity. And I remember the first couple of weeks we got in some trouble, you know, as a team, and we had to bag skate. And my brother was so out of shape that he couldn't even do the bag skate. And they were ready to cut him because he was so out of shape. So me and a couple of the other veterans were actually – you know, goofing around and yelling back at the coach. So he would skate us more to give my brother a bit of a rest. So that's one story that I remember thinking about that.
I mean, me and Akil, we both have younger brothers, you know, both our brothers, and the age gap is so far that we will probably never get the chance to play with them. What was it like to play with your brother?
In junior, it was great. It was great because I had to go through things the hard way in junior. I had to learn how to be a rookie. I had to learn, but I sort of now had the opportunity to be a leader and show my brother the ropes of what it's like to be in junior hockey, right? So I was signed, so I had the big contract and all that. So I'd pick him up from school. We'd go to lunch. You know, he didn't have to ride in the trunk like some of the other rookies did, like when I played. So I sort of took care of him, showed him the ropes. But I was hard on him as well because I was the captain of the team. I pushed him to be better. But just helping him where I sort of had problems, that actually made it an easier transition for him coming out of not even playing hockey to surviving and thriving in Kingston and in the OHL.
Let's go back to some of your highlights in your life. In 2005, playing for Team Canada, you played with some greats, like not just greats, but future Hall of Famers, Patrice Bergeron, Ryan Getzlaff, Jeff Carter, Corey Perry, Mike Richards, Shea Weber, basically yeah. Shea Butterman, Brett Seabrook, and of course, Sidney Crosby. Who stood out to you the most on that squad?
It had to be Crosby, just based on he played as a 15-year-old, and he was pretty good, but he was playing against men, 18, 19-year-olds. But just seeing his transition going from year one to year two, he left the kid, and he came back as a man. And he went from fourth line to first line, dominating the tournament just like that. He came with Bergeron. He was playing with Perry as well. And just seeing him dominate, I was like, whoa. You know, the first year, you know, there's pictures of me with my arm around him. And the second year, you know, I'm asking him for advice. So just seeing that transition of greatness in 1 year, I was like, whoa. And again, I was the top scorer the year before, and he just passed me in one calendar year where I was like, this kid is a Hall of Famer just based on it. Because a lot of kids are hyped up. There was a lot of hype with all the players on the team. But just seeing Crosby in practice, seeing him down low, how strong he was on the puck, how humble he was, how good of an all-around player he was, I was like, dude, this guy's gonna tear the NHL up.
It's so funny because we had Jaden Lindell on the show, and he talked about playing with Connor McDavid as a young man. So I'm assuming it's kind of like the same thing. But also on that team, you had two other black players on there. You had Sean Bell and Nigel Dawes. What was your relationship like with those boys? And did you have some sort of familiarity with them in the sense that you guys could kind of have those type of conversations on the side outside of the relationship you had with the other players?
Yeah, it was great because we came up through, you know, the under 17, under 18 programs where, you know, I think in under 17, we started playing against each other, but under 18, you know, we actually played together. So I knew Nigel really well. I knew Sean really, really well as well. So we sort of had that unspoken connection where, you know, obviously you joke about it. Hey, you know what? That's the recipe for success. If you have more than one black guy, you're going to win gold. So we knew that we were going to have a chance to win, but you have that unspoken bond where you sort of look out for each other. But those guys are all around great hockey players, and to have three players of, you know, minority backgrounds on a national team for Canada, you know, back then you don't really appreciate it. But now that I'm 35 years old and it's 15 years ago, it's a pretty big accomplishment for sure.
You know what was really cool about that? They replayed your finals a couple of nights ago, and you scored a goal, and Nigel assisted. But what was interesting was Sean Bell passed it towards Nigel, and it went off of, I can't remember, maybe Seabrook's skate.
Yeah,
so he lost the assist, and I thought, oh, my God, how cool would that have been? It would have been Bell Dawes scored by Stewart. So that was
It was great. I don't want to segue it, but, you know, Atlanta, we had five players. You know, we had five players on the team that were black hockey players, and it was interesting because, you know, we had Bufflin, who was from Minnesota, Johnny Oduya, who was Swedish, right? Mm-hmm. We had Dawes. We had Evander Kane, who was young. So we had a different mixed bag of guys from different cultures, but shared that bond as well.
So let's talk about Atlanta. That happened in 2010. That was the second time in NHL history that five black players played on one squad. The first time was in 99 with the Edmonton Oilers. How was it in Atlanta, and did hockey miss the boat being in such a predominantly black city.
Yeah, I think so. But the one thing I do remember is just pulling out of my complex and living in my building, there was black executives, black music moguls, people that owned hair salons. So there was wealth within that community. And it wasn't a big deal that I was that was a hockey player. I was just a normal person. And you'd go through the mall in Atlanta and you'd see, you know, you'd see, you know, Young Jeezy, or you'd see Usher at the mall, and they just leave them alone. They wouldn't be up in their face asking for autographs. So just that culture of being in that city was definitely amazing for me. And I think me being comfortable 100%, that's where I had my best year, because I was surrounded by people that looked like me every single day. I was comfortable in that setting. So from a hockey standpoint, it was a bit tough because the owners owned the basketball team as well. They put all the resources into the basketball team, and the hockey side sort of, you know, dwindled a little bit. And at some games, we would only have 3,000-4,000 fans. But I'm telling you, it was an amazing building, amazing city. Every single player that played there, they loved Atlanta. But just for that hockey side, it's it struggled a bit. But for me, I think it's an amazing hockey city, and I think one day, you know, the NHL should get back there or at least have a minor league hockey team as well.
It's kind of funny how you say that, because this year I'm going to Ryerson. We've talked about it on the show before, but there's four black players on the team. So I think to have that experience to just play with that many black players on the team is kind of cool. And knowing that you were a part of that once, I find that pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it's good. And Ryerson's a great program. Again, I know the Ducos, you know, Nathaniel Brooks used to coach there as well. And again, you're in the city, you're walking downtown. It's a melting pot of different cultures. So you're going to have a great year as well, for sure.
Is it true that Little John tried to save the Thrashers, to keep them there in Atlanta?
I didn't hear about that, but Joe Johnson actually killed the Thrashers because the owners of the basketball team were sort of arguing if they should really give him that big, big contract. I think he signed like $130 or $140 million. And half the owners weren't too happy with it. So they divested. They wanted to get out. So they actually had to sell the team to give these guys their money back. So, Joe Johnson is actually the guy who killed the Thrashers. So that's my story. I'm sticking to it.
Okay. Switch gears a little bit, you know, on you know, radio and television, you know, I've heard you talk about some of the situations that are going on in society and in the world of hockey. You had said that after the Akeem Alou situation was made public, that you hope that this would open up dialogue. Has it? And are you happy with the direction things are going right now?
Well, I think I may have taken the opposite approach, where I actually was on national TV, you know, in front of Hockey Night Canada. And I said, well, you know, let's stop talking about it. That's all we do is talk about it. It's time for action. So, you know, what usually happens is, you know, it's a trending topic for 2-3 weeks, and then everyone goes back to normal life, and then this sort of goes back on the back burner. But what, you know, is an opportunity now is to actually get change, to actually really, really make a difference. And again, I'm living it every single day, you know, with the minor hockey. And I'm going to make change the best way I know how. And the best way I know how is, hey, you know what? Let's put, you know, 20, 30, 40 black hockey players in the National Hockey League in the next 10, 15 years. So once you're in Atlanta like us, where we have five players, you don't really even talk about it because it's just the norm. So I think now it's an issue because, you know, some teams have one, some might not have any. And then, hey, you know, it's the one guy in the room. But if you have 5-6 guys in the dressing room, that's when you actually stop talking about it and it becomes the norm.
Growing up, for me and Akil, I think times have changed a lot since it was back then. And I know there's a lot more racism in the game. Personally, from my cousin Austin, who you played with, he's told me that back then he's gone through some things. Have you ever dealt with any racism when you were playing? And what was that like?
Yeah, I've had a couple instances, but, you know, it's such a situation where, you know, back then, you know, people say, well, that's how the times were, but it was so insignificant of a situation where I'm just like, there's something wrong with you. If you're a racist in 2020, dude, you better be under a rock, you know, tweeting from an account with a nickname and 20 numbers attached to it, because if you get caught, you're done. But back then, yeah, there were some instances. I remember playing some American teams and people dropping the N-bomb. But remember, we're on ice. We're on ice where you can drop the gloves and really do something about it. So people really can't really have to watch their words when they're on the ice. So yes, instances do happen. it is issue. One issue, one instance is too much. But for me, you know, I had so many other obstacles. You know, there was some games I was going to where I didn't know what I was eating for dinner after the game. So I was more worried about playing well so the family could say, hey, you know what? You want to stop at McDonald's? So I was playing for that. So that was my struggle. But again, it does happen. And you know, prime example is, you know, for my brother. My brother lived in Minnesota. And, you know, Philando Castile got shot by a cop, you know, on camera. And I was talking to my brother a couple months later where, you know, he was on the phone and he had to put the phone down saying, hey, I got the cops in my radar here. I got to just sort of just, you know, dip out because he doesn't want to get caught in the crosshairs of the police. So it does happen. One situation is too much. But again, my message to the young guys, hey, you guys, you got to rise above and beyond because there's going to be people that don't like you for you, but you guys are superheroes. You know, you guys are playing, you know, a sport professionally at the college level. There's so many people that haven't had that opportunity. You guys aren't victims. You guys are superheroes. So you got to have that mentality.
You know, one of the biggest setbacks in the game, and you've talked about it a little bit, is the cost. What are your thoughts on that? And what are your plans to try and fix that issue?
Yeah, that's my main issue. And again, I think you deny a category of people or a class of people just based on the costs. And it, the real problem with that is if these costs now, what they were, you know, if they were like that 15, 20 years ago, there would be no Anthony Stewart. There'd be no Chris Stewart. There'd be no Wayne Simmons. There'd be no Devontae Smith-Pelly. So that's four players that, you know, play in the National Hockey League that if the costs were that they are today, they would not have that opportunity because families, you know, we had a lot of help from other families, but families, unless you're super rich, you cannot afford to eat $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 for registration, for equipment, for training, for schooling. So for me, what I'm trying to do with my platform now is start raising funds and getting, you know, sponsorships and having, you know, fundraisers now to alleviate a lot of those costs because there could be the next Wayne Simmons or Smith-Pelly or Akil Thomas that's in Toronto in a neighborhood that we don't even know that can't even get on the ice because they can't afford $60 to go do a training session. They can't afford, you know, $500 for skates, not even $500. They're $1,000 or $500 for a stick. That's the true sadness in the game of hockey today.
So I feel like, you know, every community in Toronto is so different. There's so many different communities and the, you know, different people on them and stuff. And I was just thinking for, you know, a Forest Hill kid, his minor hockey journey would, you know, involve just, you know, getting in his Range Rover, given driven to the rinks by his parents, you know, getting all the equipment he wanted. Yeah. Can you just take us through maybe some of the struggles you experienced in your minor hockey journey?
Well, I was broke. So I'll give you a couple little instances of that. So, you know, we used to have to, you know, take the bus down to the arena. We lived in Malvern and we had to go to West Hill because I was playing for West Hill. So back then the bus was $2 for adults, 50 cents for kids. So $2.50 to get on the bus. We didn't even have that. We did not have that. So my dad, I remember going on the bus. He's like, take your bag, go to the back. And he would go and he'd chop it up with the bus driver and say, hey, you know, I'm taking my son to hockey. Can we get on, you know, free ride? We don't have any money. Sometimes they would say yes. But sometimes they would say no, and we'd have to get off the bus and start walking. So that walk from, you know, Morningside and Shepherd area to, you know, Mance Row, Morningside and Lawrence, that's tough. So now imagine that with 6 inches of snow and you're carrying your hockey bag. So I remember being frostbit walking and getting down there. And again, that was one instance that really stands out for me because, you know, we didn't have the $2.50 to get into the arena.
Yeah, you know, it's just funny you say that. You mentioned, you know, the bus fare stuff. Just because, you know, I didn't, you know, grow up, you know, dead broke, but I had to, you know, bus and subway to school every day and bus and subway back. And obviously, it was like $2 when I was going to school, but you know, it added up, you know, week by week. And you know, I just didn't like, you know, ask my mom for, you know, a set amount for the whole week. And so that's kind of how I started Zale Apparel. I started selling t-shirts to my buddies at school, and I figured, you know, just to pay my bus fare for the week. And then it just started, you know, doing super well. So it's just kind of neat how, you know, I just kind of did that.
Find
so
a way.
And I think Kwame may remember this. I'm not sure if you remember when McDonald's used to have like sponsorship forms at McDonald's where you go and raise money. And I used to take my brother door to door. I'm like, hey, would you like to sponsor my brother for whatever? And we'd get $2, $5, $10 a day. And that's how we used to eat.
Yeah. But I heard a story that you guys would have, you know, broken a hockey stick and you'd tape the stick and play. Is that true?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember.
Talk about that. Talk about that.
So sticks used to be, I think, $20 for the Shearwood PMP. And I remember asking my dad, hey, I need the stick. I need the stick. So I was actually frustrated that I didn't score a goal one time. And I actually hit it over the post. And it actually split all the way through the middle. And my dad saw that I did that out of, hey, daddy's doing an interview. Okay, you got to go upstairs. You want to ask that again or no?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was saying, no, I remember, you know, breaking my stick, you know, over the post in anger one time. The sticks were $20 and we didn't have enough money to afford a new one. So my dad actually made me tape it with box tape. So I actually have video of me playing. I think I was in the Timmy Tyke or something like that with literally box tape around my stick. And my one thing is my dad didn't even remember, you know, what height to cut a stick. So I remember my stick being like this tall, like it was literally taller than me. And I was just out there dangling around scoring goals with a box tape stick.
So needless to say, it was pretty tough coming up, because it's very interesting. Your story, your brother's story, your family's story, because usually stories like that, where a kid comes from, you know, poverty and makes it to a national sports league, that usually happens in basketball or baseball or football. You never really hear that in the game of hockey. So you guys are an anomaly, but it just goes to show, and you tell me, it just goes to show that if you're willing to work hard and you'll find a way to get there. Is that kind of like the Stewart family story?
Yeah. And again, if I was a plumber, I think I'd be the best plumber in the world. And that same mentality that you have growing up, it helps you for the rest of your life, and it's helping me now with SportsCenter. I'm one of the hardest working guys, but those general life lessons I learned, be appreciative, be humble, be a good people person, you know, be kind to the people that can't do nothing for you. Those are the lessons I learned from hockey that are helping me, you know, in life as well.
Yeah.
I mean, going forward, like now you've learned all those lessons. Now you're working with kids, you're coaching, you're running skates. How long have you been working with kids, and is that something you want to keep going with?
Yeah, I've been doing it for 4 years now. And again, Sportsnet is trying to get me to do that full time. But I'm telling you, I coach 34 kids. I train 50. In my mind, they're all making the National Hockey League. And I have, you know, I have female players. You know, I have kids that probably aren't going to grow. But in my mind, they're all going to make it. And I treat everyone like that, because I think with those life lessons, again, Akil can know this, there's a lot of skilled players that don't get the same opportunity because they're whiny, they're not good people to be around, they're always just negative. But if you have those attributes, positive, good to be around, humble, and you work hard, extremely hard, the skill stuff's going to come. But if you have those other tools, that's going to help you in hockey, absolutely.
One of your proteges, one of the kids that you're kind of mentoring and working with, is a young man by the name of Nathaniel Adams. For anybody who's seen the film Soul on Ice, Past, Present, and Future, he's the young dread that's in there. How's he making out right now, and what are your thoughts on his direction as far as hockey goes and the type of person he is as a young man?
Yeah, Nate's a great kid, very humble. And again, I see him around the arena pretty much every week, and I train him once a week. And his vision is he's like a young Sidney Crosby, and I told his dad that. And it's a kind of a comparison where it's big shoes to fill, but his skills are amazing, right? So I want him to be now focus on those other parts, control the things that you can't control. If you're not going to be the biggest guy, well, you know what? You better be the strongest, most explosive. So just seeing him in a game, you're like, wow, this kid is the real deal. So, but again, I talk to his dad all the time, and his dad's always taking, well, you know, we'll see how far we can take it. Hopefully we'll get an opportunity. Humble. That's the mentality, as opposed to, well, my son's the best. So his dad's got the right upbringing, and he's upbringing him the right way. And I wouldn't be surprised. I say he'll be, you know, I could say it now, it's 2 years before his OHL draft. He'll be a top 20, top 40 pick, no doubt in my mind, in the OHL.
How much fun did you have in your career playing in the NHL, man?
Too much fun. That's why I'm done playing. Right? So, again, and I came in a time, right, where it was the, you know, early to mid-2000s where, you know, you're living in Florida, you got money, you're living on the beach, you know, guys are golfing. You know, remember, I play with guys that were 35, 40 years old. Some of my guys that I played with are on their last year of their career, so they were in full party mode. And with me, you want to fit in, so what are you doing? You know, I'll come party, right? So I had to learn things the hard way. And, again, I didn't actually get in any trouble, but, again, I didn't work as hard as I did to get to the National Hockey League, to stay in the National Hockey League. Mm. And, again, I trained really, really hard in the gym, but, again, I could have slept a couple more hours. I could have eaten a little bit better, but the good part about that is I learned it the hard way. And just like it was with the OHL with my brother, I told him those lessons and it made it easier for him. It made it easier for Wayne. It made it easier for Devo, right? So it made it easier for these guys. So I wish if I had someone like me growing up, I think I probably would still be playing. But again, I wouldn't change my career because how I was as a teammate, that gave me the opportunities that I have now in Sportsnet. And Sportsnet is something where, you know, I have the potential to do this for the next 30 years if it's something I want to do. But part of that was my reputation in the hockey world, being an easygoing, great teammate, sticking up for anybody, laid back. So those are those attributes that I had that's helping me now.
So you talked about your rough upbringing and how tough that was. And then obviously you make the NHL and, you know, you have, you know, some cash to play with. And, you know, talk about how, you know, weird that must have been going from, you know, one end to the other end, basically on a financial level.
Well, I splurged. I bought my mom a house with my first contract and I dropped $100K on a Cadillac Escalade because that's what it was. You buy an Escalade and you put 24-inch rims on it. So I think I was the only guy in the city of Toronto with floaters. So I'm not sure. I think you guys know spinners, but floaters were the weighted rims. So when the car drives, the rims stay still. So I was the only guy in the city with those, but, you know, looking back now, you should have put it in a 401k or put it in a mutual fund. But that's another lesson that I'm teaching these kids now. You gotta, you know, you gotta be financially responsible because there's a lot of guys you see it in the NBA, NFL, they spend a lot of their money and they go broke. And a lot of these guys have made $60, $70, $80 million. So I spent a lot. So I understand their, you know, their plights. But again, you got to have fun, but life's just like, you know, everyone tells you life's about balance. So yeah, you can have some fun, but you know, you don't be like me popping bottles, you know, on King Street, but that's how it was back then. Right. And I'll tell you a quick story. I was the first guy, I was on King Street and I remember The Weeknd, you know, the singer, The Weeknd.
Yeah.
He wasn't even popping yet. And I remember I was in the club. And they did not let him in the club because he was wearing all camel.
Oh, no way.
So my boy, who was his security guard, he's like, hey, can you get him in? I'm like, yeah, I don't have that much pull. Sorry, man. So before the weekend. So I was in the club before the weekend was.
Hey, you know what? It's very interesting. Just that what you're talking about, the life lessons, the things that you've learned and the stuff that you're passing down to the young guys, like, you know, when Wayne was coming up and Devo and all these guys, and the simple fact that you didn't have that type of mentorship. Is that something that has always lacked in the idea of the black hockey player? Because it's not like you guys were the ones who started. There was the Tony McKegney's, there were the Grant Fuhrer's, there was the Willie O'Ree's. Is that something that was missing, and is that something that you'd like to see happen going forward, especially for guys like Akil and Elijah that are coming up?
I'm trying to find an analogy. It's like it's almost, you know, it's almost a miracle that, you know, at the time that, you know, Mike Marcin made the National Hockey League, and all these guys make the National Hockey League. And so say you get that golden ticket for, you know, the chocolate factory. Are you going to say, well, here's a piece to you? You're like, I'm taking this and I got the secret. Now I'm just going in and taking care of myself because, you know, not to get too political, you know, the system's not designed for players of minority backgrounds to go in and thrive. So I think guys, when they get in there, they're like, well, you know what? I got to worry about myself here because what if another brother comes in and maybe he's going to push me out or take my job? So with me, and I told Achilles the first time I sat down with him, you got to recognize the people that are there to actually genuinely help. And I said, hey, anything you need, you give me a call because I don't need anything from you, but there's a lot of people that are you know, in it for the wrong reasons. They're in it to benefit themselves somehow. But for me, you know, I think the proof is in the pudding, you know, with my brother and with Wayne. You know, people ask me, oh, you know, are you a little bit jealous of your brother? I'm like, No, Stewart, the corporation of Stewart is doing really, really well. The Toronto Vision, not so well as the Philadelphia Division, but yeah, it's under the same umbrella. I'm extremely proud of him. I'm extremely proud of Wayne. Extremely proud of Devo. All these guys that were in this circle where we worked out together, trained together, ate together. Everyone's doing well. So now I'm saying I want to expand that umbrella and help the next 20, 30 kids that are in line.
Do you think Devo is going to be in that position where he's going to have to kind of reflect on his career and say, you know, these are the things that I did that I shouldn't have, and I'm going to have to pass that on? Or is there still some redemption for Devontae Smith-Pelly? Because I'll tell you this, when you're in Washington, you say the name Devontae Smith-Pelly, these people worship him like he is a hockey god.
Yeah, you go on Twitter right now and type in his name, you'll have 30 Washington fans, bring back Smith-Pelly, bring back Smith-Pelly, because what he did in that playoffs, you know, that's like Martin Jelena scoring all those overtime goals. He is an X factor in the playoffs. So, you know, I blame part of that on Joel Ward because, you know, he would always say, well, it's not even March yet, it's not even playoffs, because he'd only show up in playoffs. So he would literally score more points in playoffs than he did during the regular season. So he'd always be laid back, like, yeah, it's November, yeah, I haven't scored yet, whatever. It's not even March or April. So he would turn it on. So with Devo, again, he had to learn the hard way that, again, nobody owes you anything. You know, you scored some of the biggest goals, but you got to come and do it again. And that's the thing. No one's going to do you any favors. No one owes you a thing. But with Devo, he's a great hockey player. He's a National Hockey League player. Yeah. He's probably going to have to make some sacrifices. He might have to go down to the minors for a bit and prove his worth again. But he's a National Hockey League. But like we said before, it's not about how good you are. It's those other factors, timing, opportunity, all those other things that you're willing to do to be an everyday National Hockey League player.
As a young player, what advice would you give to Akil directly to make sure that he's on the right track, that he knows exactly what his mission is and he sticks to that?
20. So I want you to write on your stick 20, because until you score 20 goals in the league, you got to toe that company line. And that's the issue with some of these guys. Well, I was nice, but did you score 20 goals? And that was the thing. I was always struggling to score that 20 goals. So, again, I'm telling you now, Akil, they're going, oh, you know, he's got the clothing line. He's not focused. You know, when's the last time he cut his hair? But, again, look at Brent Burns when he first came in the league. Look at Brent Burns now. Clean cut. You know, he had his thing all buttoned up. He went. He scored his 20 goals. Now the guy comes in looking like the beef jerky guy, you know, looking like a caveman every single day. Because you know what? He scored 20 goals. Nobody could tell him nothing, right? So same thing with my brother. My brother literally sent him down 2-3 times. You're out of shape. You're lazy. He scored 28 goals. Buddy, yeah, next. Go do your thing, bro. So 20. Once you score 20 and you can't focus on anybody else, you're in your own lane. They're judging you on you and what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, told that company line, I know it's tough, but once you score 20, dude, open up 12 clothing lines. I'll support. I'll be tweeting about it too.
So, you know, Elijah and I are both older brothers and mentors to our younger brothers and siblings. What advice would you have for us in guiding our little bros in the right direction?
Do what, you know, what your dad did for you. He brought you around. So as soon as you get to LA or wherever you're going to be, bring them around. Get them a taste of that lifestyle, because it's going to motivate him to be better, to do better. So, you know, he sees what you're doing with the clothing line. He's seeing all this stuff. It's going to motivate him, because when you're around greatness and around great people, it motivates you, right? And Elijah, bring him, you know, bring him on the ice at Ryerson. Why not? Bring him on the ice. Let him know the college lifestyle. You know, bring him to camp and show him around. Motivate him. Start motivating, because a lot of kids, they don't really have that self-confidence. They're taught to, you know, suck it up and be tough and don't tell anybody your feelings. But, you know, when they see their big brothers doing things, they get a little bit jealous and they don't really know how to react. But when you make them a part of that, they're going to be like, you know what, I can do this too. And for me, you know, as much as I motivated my brother, he wanted to be just like me. You know, I had to bring him to Scarborough Town Center, and I'm like, man, this guy's 5'2" with a red afro, man. How am I going to, you know, talk to Tings with my little brother? I brought him around, and when I was going for runs and stuff, you know, he's too ticked to be running. So I'm like, buddy, get on the bike, follow me on your bike, and So I motivated him. So bring him around greatness, show him it, because it's going to, I'm telling you, that's what motivated my brother, because then he wanted to be like me. Then he's like, you know what? I'm as good, I can be better. So bring them around, show them how great they can be.
It's funny that you say that, just because before I went to the O, you know, I was living at home, obviously, and my little bro and I, we'd play mini six like every day. We'd shoot pucks together every day, stick handle pretty much every day and stuff. So it was just like a, you know, an everyday thing. We'd just do our thing together. And when I kind of moved, went to the OHL, obviously, he still kind of did that stuff, but he didn't, like, I wasn't there for him to see me when he no. came home from school shooting pucks and stuff. And we used to play NHL, like, on the video game all day against each other and all that stuff. So he kind of, you know, when I moved, he kind of got out of that. And he kind of lost the love for hockey. And, you know, obviously this past year, I wasn't with him the whole year. And when I went to Atlanta to go visit him, I made sure, like, I had no room in my car. But I made sure I had to bring my mini stick nets. Just so we can, you know, play down there and, you know, because I'm just trying to get him back in the game. And so,
Why not, you've got your signing bonus coming up. Why not get him season tickets for the Gladiators? Let him go watch East Coast League. Let him be a part of that atmosphere. Let him see it, because something's going to click when he gets old enough saying, hey, well, if my brother can do it, maybe I can do it. And again, I've seen your brother play. He's played AAA in the same organization a year down. He could play. Right, but you can't do it for him. You can motivate him, but you just got to find a way to have that button click.
Yeah, so like in Atlanta, like a couple of times, you know, after we're playing NHL together, after we're playing mini six, he's like, maybe I do want to play hockey. I don't know. Right. So yeah. Like hearing that.
Yeah, that's honestly it's some great advice. When I think of both my and Nikhil's brothers stopped playing hockey, my brother's switching to basketball. So
and easy that to turns play. Out well. And I was on the ice with Easy and. And I undervalued him, you know, because the first time I skated with them, he's like, oh, I can't tie my skates. I need my mom to help me get my skates and my foot in my skates. I'm like, oh man, here we go, this guy. But then he made a AAA team, and I saw him, and I'm like, this kid can play. could play. So, but again, you know, let them take. You know, look at Jordan Subban. He was a player. You know, up until I think Pee Wee or minor bantam, he's like, yeah, you know what, I'm gonna be a goalie. So again, they could step away from basketball, but I'm telling you that their natural love is seeing their brothers doing it is gonna be hockey. You know, you can stray away and go play other sports, but they're gonna come back. But just find a way to create that opportunity to keep that door open for them and play.
Yeah, for real. I mean, you mentioned Sportsnet a couple times. You know, you've talked about how you could work there for 30 years. How exactly did you get involved with Sportsnet?
Because of my Twitter. Oh, wow. So I'm on my phone a lot, and again, I have a lot of thoughts in my head, and that's my advice for you guys. You know, the routine of a hockey player: you go to the rink, you go to lunch, you sleep 3-4 hours, you get up, you go to dinner, you play some video games, you go to bed. But you know, I was stuck in that routine. But then once I started, you know, interacting with people, going out, having lunches with different people, networking, I was on Twitter. And one of the producers of and program directors of Sportsnet saw me on Twitter, and he's like, hey, do you want to do some lunch and chat? I'm like, okay, cool. He's like, well, would you be interested in, doing some Leafs analysis? And I'm like, I don't really want to talk about the Leafs, you know, all day. I'm not really a fan. My brother's still playing. I don't really pay attention, but I'll try it out. So I wasn't sure how I was going to like it, but it was just me now that I'm done playing. To try something new, get out of my comfort zone. So I did it. I did it probably about 15, 20 times last year. And they kept giving me more opportunity where I'm there talking about tennis. And I'm there talking about, I did the full week Raptors preview with me and one other guy. And I don't really know a lot about basketball, but I didn't want to say no. So I just winged it. Right. I did my best. And I actually did a pretty good job. So I didn't say no to anything for that first year. And they offered me a contract, for this upcoming season. So I did that. And what's good about this is we're not just sitting there talking about Leafs. We talked about Don Cherry. We talked about everything other than hockey. And that actually prepped me to learn how to talk and fly. You know, I've known Kwame now for 3-4 years. I probably wasn't talking like this 5 years ago, but
yeah. it's
there networking, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting because, again, it's just like I see this in Akil. I also see this in Elijah. But I was mentioning this to somebody a couple of weeks ago. I said, if you watch Anthony Stewart on television now and you ask me if that's the same guy that I met in 2013, 13 and yeah. sitting in front of the camera, night and day. Yeah. And I have to commend you. And I don't know how you did it, but can you talk to us about how you made that transition to become comfortable in front of the camera, because you do such a great job?
Just, you know, I jumped in feet first, and I remember being the first, you know, doing Sportsnet TV, you know, hey, can you do this? And I'm like, yeah. But I remember standing, you know, sitting there next to Carolyn Cameron, who's, you know, probably the smartest lady in Canada talking sports, and the lights are on my face like this, and there's four people, you know, looking at you, what you have to say. And I literally fumbled the first couple of words.
I've seen that. I've seen some of those.
The team behind the team is very encouraging, but you're going to make mistakes. You got to roll with the punches. You can't take yourself too serious. You can't be afraid to make a mistake. And I've messed up a lot of times, but the more times you do it, just like in hockey, you get your repetition up, you get more comfortable. Whereas now, you know, I remember, you know, trying to do a speech with Kevin Meeks, and I almost got booed out of the building. That's how bad it was. Where now I'm not comfortable. I can go do speeches and public speaking. So, you know, for you younger guys now, you know, it's going to suck when you guys lose a game and no one wants to talk. Talk. Get in front of the camera. Talk. Be, you know, don't just give the whole, well, yeah, you know, we got to play a good 60 minutes, get pucks in deep and be excited to do the interviews, you know, you know, shake their hand before, tell them thank you very much for your time after, because when you get that opportunity now, they're going to remember that. And they're going to say in 10, 15 years, you know what? Akil Thomas is a great guy. Say what you want about PK. He's going to step in if he wants and be the next Don Cherry if he wants, just because how he is in front of the camera and how he is. He's got energy every time he talks. He's laughing. He's excited. The viewers want to see that. So every time that camera gets on you, just think, you know, this is something I may want to do 15, 20 years down the line.
You know, in talking to Akil and Elijah, I mean, I used to be a radio announcer, so this is kind of just, this is old news to me. You know, it takes you a little bit to get back into it, but you could do it. But the thing for these guys, I look at them and I say, man, you guys have your future ahead of you. Akil going to Los Angeles, if you could have a good personality, and not saying that he has to fake the funk, but I'm saying that if he can just be who he is, but have that shown through a microphone, he's going to be beloved, and he could do so much for the game out in LA. Plus, I think doing this podcast gives him the ability to get his chops in, to have these conversations and not, you know, get on there when, you know, during intermission, he does the hockey guy talk. He can just actually talk like a personality. So that's great. Yeah.
Akil, if you want free, you know, courtside tickets for the Lakers, you got to get out there and start be personable, doing interviews, right?
Yeah. 100%. So you started your career in North America, finished it in Europe. What were the differences that you liked and disliked about it?
With Russia, I started off when I didn't have a contract. I didn't really want to go down to the American Hockey League, so I actually went to Russia, you know, obviously for the money. It was great money. It was NHL money. But again, it was just a culture shock. You know, you get there, and, you know, you're in an airport, and they don't show up to pick you up. And you're there for 2 hours in a Russian airport waiting, messaging them on Twitter to come get you. So you get there, and with Russia, they don't really do their homework. They'll go, they'll read your stats and say, oh, okay, this guy scored 5 shootout goals. Hey, this guy's a shootout specialist. So they had me pegged as a skilled shootout specialist. And I get there, I'm on the first line. No one speaks any English. They're doing the drills and the intricate drills in Russia. I'm like, I don't even know what's going on. It took me 3 weeks just to get, you know, accustomed to what was going on. The food. You know, I was standing in line at McDonald's, and if you don't know how to say burger, fries, and drink in Russian, you can't order it. It's not, you can't say number one. You have to, so I'd be there trying to order, some Russian guy would bud me in line. So I was just like, you know, you weren't even eating properly. You know, lunch is at 12. You get there at 12 o'clock, food's gone. There's no, so it's every man for themselves down there. But it was good. I had my wife came down with my son at the time, which was good. So it was good to have them there. But at the same time, as much as it was a crazy experience, it was a life experience. You know, not many people could say they lived in Russia. Not many people could say they lived in Switzerland. I lived in Croatia for 2 months, right? So my son's American. So those are life skills now where, you know, it gave me a real appreciation of where, you know, the game could take me. My son always wants to go to Australia. I'm like, well, if you want to, you know, be able to travel to Australia for free, well, you better start working on your hockey. Right?
Let's talk about your future goals in the industry. What are your plans and how can people get involved or follow your career going forward?
Yeah, so I'll make this as an announcement. Nathaniel Brooks and I are starting a foundation/program called Seaside Hockey. And what it's going to do is it's going to serve the underprivileged youth for the game of hockey. So what it's going to do is we're going to have a free house league. We're going to pay for everyone's equipment. We're going to pay for the ice. We're going to pay for development. So now when you have kids now at 5, 6, 7 years old starting hockey, they're not going to, you know, Johnny, that's the mechanic down the street. They're coming to pro hockey players that played pro or played junior or played college and get really good instruction. So just imagine now, Akil, if you had a program that you were going to from 5 years old and they stayed with you along the way until you were 17, 18. Just imagine now you had the mentorship, you had the training, you had the gym, how much greater of a player you would be. So that's my goal for this next generation of kids. Keep these kids in-house, give them everything they need, you know, with regards to hockey, life, mentorship, financing. And I'm telling you, there's going to be, and everyone says, well, the next LeBron James of hockey. I'm telling you, it's coming. And in my mind, it's coming from our program.
Are there any dates on when you want to have that up and going, or is it still in the works?
Well, it's COVID sort of put a wrench in the plans, but we're going to start off with development skates probably. I want to get it going just after Christmas. We're probably going to have a camp next year. We're working on some other things too. I wish I could announce it right now, but we're still in the background doing it. But I'm getting on the ice as soon as possible. In the meantime, without the big banner behind me, I'm on the ice doing it day to day. I'm on the ice with these young kids now. I keep mentioning my wife does the books for my hockey school. And she's like, I thought you said you had 20 kids on the ice, 25 kids. The books are only showing, you know, 12 paid, right? So, because I'm going above and beyond. I'm not going to have a kid not be able to play hockey because of the price. Because any family back then or organization could have easily did that to me and my brother and my family, but they went above and beyond. And that helped get us the National Hockey League, having that whole village, that everyone help out. And that's what I'm trying to do for the next generation of hockey players.
Are you going to do anything where, you know, the regular hockey fan can actually contribute to help?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to have a website launching right now. I'm also launching the Stuart Hockey Scholarship Fund, where now you could donate directly towards a specific player, specific game. Nice. So if you want to donate to girls hockey, you want to donate to equipment, you want to donate to registration, I'm going to have that option as well too. So I want to make sure, you know, it's done the right way. I don't want to just say, hey, here's a GoFundMe. I want to do it the right way where you do charitable receipts and do it the right way. So that's sort of the hiccup right now with COVID. But it's going to really make a difference in these young kids now, because I'm coming out of pocket. And I mean, I did make some money, but not a lot of money where I can't do this for 20, 30 kids like we're trying to do.
Right. I think what's beautiful about that is you've got a plan that seems like it's on the path of a marathon, not a sprint. It's going to take some time. It's going to take a lot of work. I know guys like Akil and Elijah, once this whole COVID thing is passed and they have a break, I'm sure they're going to volunteer and help with you. And I think that's what's very important. They need to see people that look like them to be able to feel like they can do it as well.
Yeah, and it's going to be great. And that's another thing, too. I ask you guys, everyone says, well, how can I help? Get on the ice. Get on the ice in a tracksuit, and you're going to see the young kids, you know, face light up. They don't even care where you play. They're just seeing a guy bigger than them that looks like them in a tracksuit playing amazing hockey, whereas normally they can only see it on TV, you know, with the Toronto Maple Leafs. So I'm telling you, when you see these kids on the ice, and you're going to be amazed by some of them, but just seeing these kids now on a day-to-day basis – get better and grow. Like during COVID now, I've seen kids put on 4, 5, 6 inches where some of them are looking like men now. That is almost as rewarding as scoring a goal as a player. I'm telling you that.
And yeah, for sure. I mean, this all going to be based out of Toronto.
All of it out of Toronto for now. And what I want to do now is there's a lot of programs now that, you know, the National Hockey League are working with now. I wanted this to be the blueprint on how to do it for every single city in North America. You know, if you have a program now where it's sponsored by the National Hockey League, ran by former alumni of the National Hockey League who are in it for the right reasons, this could potentially be the biggest program, I think, in North America. And that's the exciting part.
Yeah, just for sure. I'll be involved. I mean, I know you and Nathaniel Brooks going to be my coach next year. So down the road, for sure, I'd love to come out, because being in Toronto, I can probably come out just whenever I don't have practice. So
that's great.
Definitely want to be involved.
Put the skates on, Kwame. Let's go. You're coming out there too.
I'm not going to embarrass myself. I'm not. Anthony Stewart's for the children. On our show, we do this thing. It's our top five. It's our top five songs. Now, Akil and Elijah, the Young Bucks, they don't understand the flavor in the air. They do not understand the pedigree of good music. They don't understand the type of music you need to get out there on the ice and just rock it. As an OG, I am really anticipating your top five, so give it to us.
Well, I'm not taking it all the way back, Kwame. I'm not taking it back to Wu-Tang.
Come on!
And again, I'm more of the Lil Wayne era, Hot Boy 94, 95 area, but I'm going to go with what got me going for pregame, right? Okay. So I was usually a DJ in the room. So again, I played obviously the Google Dolls and all that for the boys. But when I had my headset on, getting ready for the game, you can't come out like a madman right away and just be playing, you know, the pump up tunes right away, ready to, you know, you got to ease into it. So for me, first song would be Devil in a New Dress by Kanye West with Rick Ross. Mm-hmm. Then I'm going to go with Crew Love, Drake and The Weeknd, because big fans of both. I'm going with The Ride by The Weeknd and Drake.
Okay.
Then it would be tough. Now it'd be time to now really get it going now. And I'd start playing 50 Cent, The Massacre. So, you know, you play Ski Mask Way, Baltimore Love Song, Piggy Bank, right, all that. The 50 Cent Massacre, that would be really going. And then I would go finally now with Young Jeezy. So his album, Thug Motivation 101, Standing Ovation, that would be my last song before I take my headphones off. That would get me ready to, like, you know, get it on the forecheck and start banging some bodies.
I love it, man. Like, that's it. Yeah. I think, Akil, what do you think of that top five?
No, not bad at all, actually. I could definitely see myself listening to the same thing, so.
A lot of new stuff. I don't think you were expecting that, Kwame.
I wasn't expecting it.
The Ride. Lil Uzi Vert now and all that, and YNW Web Melly. I listened to that stuff as well, but that's what got me going for the games.
Yeah. Or Juice WRLD.
Juice WRLD too, yeah. RIP Juice WRLD, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I'm still waiting. Kwame. Come on. I'm still waiting for somebody to give me like a little Wu-Tang, a little Nas, a little Mobb Deep, but you know, I'll find that hockey player. I'll find
50
him.
Cent. 50 Cent was, I'm trying to think, that's as far back. I obviously went to, I know I listened to Reasonable Doubt and all that too. I wasn't really a big Jay-Z guy, but one where I became a fan of hip hop, where I'm like, I have to buy this album, I have to buy the album, was 50 Cent. That's when he first came out. I'm like, I got to get all his albums, right?
Okay. Anthony, it's been a pleasure. Give us your social media handles, and if you have any last words you want to give us, now's your chance.
No, do better than good enough, guys. I know that's a Drake quote, but that's it. You're always got to strive to be better. You always got to outwork the next guy. But remember, positive attitude. Be a good team guy. Be humble. Be humble. No one likes the guy that's always bragging about, you know, how many Instagram followers he has or BBM contacts. That's a throwback reference. But my Twitter is at Stu Monroe. My Instagram is at Stuart.hockey. And for any information about the hockey school or what's going on with the foundation, www.stuarthockey.com.
Thanks for helping on, Anthony. I really appreciate it. And if you need anything from me this summer, if you know COVID ends and there's skates and stuff, I'm there. So you know how to contact me. So thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Boys, thanks for having me on, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you, Mike.
And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the poop is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Yeah. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice. You goddamn right, I'm screaming on that beat. I got a match screaming on the streets. We in the club, stadium, Mandy Arena, cousin. Put me on ice and I'm hitting that top. Trees are dusting, fussing, fighting with myself is enticing. My enemies in the mirror, and he's always reciting the poetry of my power, statistic of my weakness. Shadow boxing with Tyson. I'm trying to show y'all I'm beating them to the
punch. Competition on the table. It's time for lunch. Though my mission isn't stable, I'm scoring once, twice, three times, and I'm taking hats. Men lie, women lie. Progress is based upon the facts. So let that baby shine. They sold a show and older. They live within the grind. Now take them out that stroller, cause coming up is a champ. Prediction of Ali. He changed his name to Muhammad. We changing free to a fee. It's up to me. And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the proof is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice. Let's dedicate this one to Jaden Linda. Let's escalate to Caddy, crush the Pinto. Or maybe you prefer that Benz, why? That big truck, I don't give a f***, only really want a house for the gift. Let's take it far down on the competition. Competition is nonsense, it's me and my soul's decision. Yeah, I only work against myself. I play against you to bench you. I'm throwing all shots to the shelf. Yeah, the top is the topic. You checking your armor. My wheel telescopic, so I'm steering my karma. The future is mine, like receiving the pass from Jesus or Jordan or Crosby, Stills and Nash. We young, and when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the proof is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. Soul on ice. I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice. Nice.